Good morning, welcome to the regular Security Committee meeting, April 6, 10 p.m. Any comments from the public? I'm not seeing any. We can go to the Security Monthly Updates. Kelly, please.
Good morning, thank you. I'll start with the operation updates with our staffing. Currently, we have 8 full-time gate officers and 2 part-time gate officers, and we have 3 patrol officers currently. We have 3 open positions for patrol, but due to the hard hiring freeze, we're unable to fill them. We're currently utilizing 1 ABA contract security officer for gate relief. However, with the hiring of the 2 part-time gate officers that we're doing, that's going to be just maybe a couple more weeks before we end that contract with them. Patrol shifts. You know what? And there is a.
I have. Oh, do you have it? Okay.
Yeah. There were 93 patrol shifts, and we could not cover 23 of them. Again, this is to hiring freeze. There's no overtime to fill in for patrol shifts and our open vacancies. Safety center repairs were signed and submitted. They're currently here working on their on our trailer. They are currently testing for mold and looking at the dry rot, and they will give us results in 24 hours of their findings, and there'll be a new estimates, I think, for the cost of repairs. So we are waiting for that, and hopefully by the board time we'll have those numbers and timelines. Our Toyota truck, there was a delay. It was held up for quality control issues at the harbor, or the pier. Is that the right place?
Yeah.
And then it was sold, so but not to us. So we are working on obtaining another VIN number, so I am working with a couple agencies now, so our dealers, so hopefully we'll get that resolved soon. Vest fittings, this board approved the vest fittings, our vest for our patrol officers. They have all been fitted. We got a really good deal. They were about $700 per vest, and there's 4 of us, and that includes that's a level 3 vest, which includes a trauma plate with actual trauma plate, not just the pouch, but you actually get the trauma plate. And it was about $3,000 for all of us, and it takes about 6 to 7 weeks to get here. So
did they have to go through the harbor?
I hope not. Hopefully they're made here. But yes, yeah, so we are waiting for that, and everybody's very excited with that.
Okay.
Moving on. Hang on 1 second. Moving on to Rancho Mirage RMA issues that we addressed with them. I met with Director Smith, Director of Compliance, a couple times this month, and I asked him, hey, what's going to happen with the Wooden Bridge educational campaign? And he again says that they're going to go through it. They're going through the process of hiring another general manager, but he believes they're still going forward with a 10-mile-an-hour sign before the bridges to let people know, hey.
Yeah, which is confusing to me, only because they have 10-mile-an-hour pathway signs anyways. So
maybe with the new JM, they're gonna reread it plan. But as far as that's it so far. We're working with SID, so we have the best dash cams. They've ordered theirs. I think we made it as well. We've ordered ours as well.
Good.
And they're going to come in about, I think they said about 6 weeks yesterday from the come in. And they actually have a person, their own maintenance can install them. So we're asking them to install ours
as well. I guess a question I would ask Kelly moving forward with that is there a quick connect, meaning we have a primary vehicle that it would have on it. If that's down for extended period, can we move it over to a backup vehicle?
Oh, that's a good question.
It may not be a daily type of swap over, but if we know we're going to go in for maintenance.
And see, that's one of the things I thought of once we get this other Toyota. I was hoping RMA would help out with the second one that we have to get.
Well, and I think we very well could.
Yeah, one of those issues.
But I think as we move forward, if nothing else, let's get the bracketing, all those things done on the new vehicle when it's getting outfitted.
It will.
So at least it has the mount.
Right.
And so then we could see how difficult it is to swap it over.
Swap it over.
Or is it something, hey, we got to go to RMA, schedule it, they swap it over, and we'll be out of that vehicle.
Right.
But long-term, I would suggest that we look at, if we have two vehicles available, we have two of the dash cams available.
Okay, sure. And in fact, I had the compliance meeting with them yesterday, and the amount of citations we're writing, it keeps coming up. You keep having the scenarios of he said, he said, she said, he said, and you just can't resolve that without these cameras. And if we're going to go forward and still cite, I'm absolutely in favor of putting it on camera so there's no issue. It just helps relieve a lot of stuff.
Right. So for your edification, a lifetime ago when I was on the compliance committee for RMA, we were using handheld video, and it was just mounted there, and that's what they used, albeit not overly effective, but when a resident would contest, there it is. It's on the video. So I think this is a much more professional way. It's a way to capture. It's a way to do quality assurance. It's much better.
And I think it also helps. A lot of times, it's he said, he said, and the committee and the resident goes back and starts going on the social media saying, this is unfair, I've never run a stop sign, and it just takes away all that, and I think it's a win overall.
I agree.
So we're excited to have those coming soon. I also spoke with, met with RMA and talked about the jurisdiction and moving forward for the areas that we don't have jurisdiction in, such as along the river, Cosumnes River, in the areas that aren't developed yet, private property. It's been past practice that if we see fire, we see kids back there, we'll go back there and address it. However, we can't cite back there. RMA tells us we have no jurisdiction. So if we go back to our original mission of report and observing, should we be reporting these bonfires to 5-9? Our sergeant went down there, and 5-9 said, hey, that's not our jurisdiction, that's CAL FIRE. And I go, well, who do we call for CAL FIRE in the middle, along this the river?
Right. So to that point, the initial response will come from Metro Fire.
Okay.
Investigational processes, it does fall under CAL FIRE because of the SRA, state responsible area that we fall into. But if we have a concern of a fire, 59 is the initial response. You could even get an engine out of Sutter Creek as well, because of how we fall into the state responsible area. Then if Metro Fire wants to investigate, so be it. If they want to turn it over to CAL FIRE, that's their issue. That is not our issue. Our issue was a fire took place.
Right. So do we want our patrol to continue to respond, use our fire extinguisher or put it out, or do we want 5-9 call in the middle of the night? I think in the past, when they have called 5-9, they kind of roll their eyes to get out there. They go take a bucket of water from the river and put it on the fire, and then look at us like, okay, why did we did that? And I go, well, I've also known, what if it's a windy and it's hot and you didn't put it out properly and then it got on fire? I go, so there's that liability issue too. Like, are we the ones, I get it. We could take a bucket and do the same thing, and that's what we've been doing, but I don't know if that's the correct procedure to go anymore.
I would tell you, in light of the fire council, in light of CAL FIRE has done reassessment to urban interface with the wildland. Again, it's not unusual for law enforcement to request a fire response for an extinguished fire. And it could be an auto fire, could be a bonfire, could be a house fire, a vehicle, doesn't matter, because if we were able to extinguish it, it's not our responsibility to find the ignition source and or confirm that it is completely out. That is fire's responsibility.
Right.
I think our responsibility is, just as you said, to observe and report.
Right.
And that is, we observed this, we did this, and here's who we notified.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, you know better than I, from your time in that small city of Los Angeles, that tag you're it if you're the last governmental official there, right?
Right.
And so, again, the highest liability we have is on a medical aid, leaving somebody with no treatment plan in place. Same would be here as we start into wildland season. If we think we did something appropriate, the issue then with Metro Fire, we can address at the higher levels and just say, here's our expectation. If there's something different, then that organization needs to tell us.
Right, and I was hoping the board and you would have that theory,
yeah.
Because going forward the summer, I think we should report and observe it and let it be. We shouldn't be down there trying to get stuck, and people are all running in all different directions. We have no jurisdiction to stop them. This is private property, and it's not even our jurisdiction. I don't think we should be involved on that. I think we should stand back and observe and report, as you said.
Absolutely.
Okay. So going forward, it's just a change of how they used to do things here. That's like a very common thing.
I understand they used to cite
for John Sullivan's property and
right.
and this new RMA.
Right.
So how
that process would work, at some point you had to use RMA property to get to their property.
I think that was the theory. Yeah, exactly.
And so to get there or to leave, at some point you were on RMA property.
And I think they've told me several people there's different ways to get in. You don't know for
right.
sure if they came in that way. They can go
right.
into the back roads. They can be on bikes. So they stopped it. So that's
right.
why we don't
say that. And so to that end, that's that part where they need to have the conversation. If it's juvenile, you have it with the parents.
Right.
If it's an adult, I'm not saying they're already lost as productive members of society if this is where we're at, but that's the process they used
right.
to go.
But the community is so used to calling us for those kind of things that
yep.
are in our jurisdiction. The other issue is not on here, but as far as us responding to this yellow bridge right over here for the people going down there in the
right.
River, again, that's a law enfortment jurisdiction.
Right. That's
not ours.
Actually, it's Sacramento County
Rangers.
Regional Parks.
Rangers, right.
Yeah, it's the Sacramento
right.
Rangers.
But they'll often call us for going there. We've
right.
been going down there, and I'm trying to put a stop to that so we
right.
focus more on our resources. So going along those lines. In other neighborhoods, the village, the manager called our security staff. They had a death investigation that occurred in the village. There was no patrol during that time. However, we went out there later on for a follow-up investigation, and it appears some neighbors found an individual that was deceased in a vehicle,
mm-hmm.
and there was a firearm on scene. And so the local police department, sheriff's department, the coroner's office is currently investigating that situation, but that happened in the village,
okay.
and we did a follow-up report as a courtesy for them. Even though we don't have jurisdiction, we still went out there and
yeah,
tried to find
no,
as
no,
much
no.
as we
that's,
can.
That's unusual. Great community.
You're right. So
support, and again, usually, from my experience, when we have a suicide, that they're using a vehicle with the garden hose. It's not a violent. Not multiple people, et cetera, et cetera. It's somebody that took the thought process to do it.
Well, there was a firearm involved, so
right.
in this
okay.
case, so.
Got it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Some other community concerns. I met with the community. I think I addressed, I don't know if I addressed this publicly or not, about a squatting incident that happened in the north. We had an individual, a couple that went on vacation.
Yes.
This was in August. Did I already address that? I think
it
personally.
Was it after the Super Bowl?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
No, this was a different one.
Oh, perfect.
Right.
Continue on.
This one was you have a couple that went on vacation. They were gone for a few weeks, and you had basically some squatters come live in their house here in the north. They threw parties, ransacked the house, stole $1,500 in cash. They didn't report it to us. I found out about it 8 months later when the victim came and told me, hey, the sheriffs aren't doing anything, they're not getting any resolution. And I go, you have they said we had a young lady watering our yard for us, but and we paid her, and we think that might be their suspect, we don't know. I asked them, well, did you pay her? She goes, yes, we usually pay her when we go away. She takes her. I go, did she come back and get paid this time? And she said, no, she did not. And I'm thinking, well, that's probably your suspect. And I go, I would contact her parents. And she said, well, the sheriff said not to do that. The insurance company said not to do it. And I gave them some tips on who to contact in the sheriff's. And they said, still nothing's happening. I go, well, then you could contact her. And he contacted her, and he didn't write me a letter. He called me and said, hey, appreciate your advice, because now I contacted the parents. They had no clue what was going on, and they reimbursed them for their deductible.
Oh, excellent. Again,
and so
Kelly,
they're happy that we gave them that kind of service, and that's all we can do. But this, again, goes to show the community, we don't hear about all the crimes, and there's only so much we can do. But in this case, we were able to help out. I go, well, you know, it's not against the law to contact them.
No.
In this case, their insurance covered a lot of it, but now they're deductible. They had some video they shared with the parent of that person. And so that happened right here in the north. So we were able to help out a little bit.
So, I'm sorry. Before you move on from that, again, it just goes to the testament of your professionalism and the KSA's knowledge, skills, and ability that you bring that even 8 months later. Now, again, I'm sure the Sacramento County Sheriff's, they might have something a little bit bigger to work on.
Sure.
But just to be able to walk a community member through the process.
Right. Little victory for us.
Right?
Right.
So I'm sure as well for them. Very good. All
yes,
right,
they're very
you.
They're appreciative that we're able to help out a little bit. All right, and I'll move on to the next slide. Again, this is our citations compared to RMA.
And this has RMA added onto it?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, CSD, RMA.
Yeah, nothing jumped out at me on this.
Okay, next one. Again, nothing really special here. Denials. And we'll get to the notes here. There's like a couple of them here.
Have you noticed any trends, or has the gate personnel mentioned anything about boats being turned around or anything since now you have to, it's your own private boat type of thing?
You know, I know they have been enforcing it, and in fact, the vice president of RMA called me about 2 days ago. And he had heard from the president of the fishing club that we had let somebody in specifically on Sunday at 9 o'clock.
Right.
And this person was a visitor and had a boat, and we just let him in. And I go, oh, that's great information. But like I've shared with you before, everything's recorded at the North Gate.
Right.
So I, within minutes, was able to go back there, pull up the officer, pull up the thing, and crystal clear video and audio. And yes, there was a boat there, and it was gas. But our gate officer not only turned him away, he gave him and highlighted copies of the rules of why he couldn't get on. So I don't know where that came from, but I invited the vice president and the president of the fishing club to come down and view the video, and they said it wasn't necessary. So it sounds like it was a miscommunication. So I know they're doing it, at least in that case.
Nope, perfect.
And
because quite honestly, our first line of defense for our reservoirs really is the fishing club, because they're out there.
Right.
They question people that have boats, and they're not afraid to ask questions.
Right, and in fact, some of the last calls in the logs, I think we had a couple officers respond to them, and they were all residents, and they were legally had a right to be there. So
right, perfect.
Yeah, we are enforcing that.
Thank you.
An instance of note on 3/2/23 at 23:35 hours. CSD security was on routine patrol in the village area when they observed a vehicle parked alongside the entrance into the village with its emergency hazards on. The officer approached the vehicle and discovered nobody was inside. The officer had CSD dispatch run the license plate and discovered the vehicle came back to a resident from the Rancho Marietta South. A male walking from the village approached the security officer and was questioned about the vehicle. The resident stated that he owned the vehicle and that is why he parked there. The resident refused to identify himself, and the security officer left the scene. Remember, this is outside the village with lights on, not inside, so 11 o'clock at night. The CSD security officer then departed for his next security stop, which was at the Catholic Church parking lot just up the street. The resident followed the security officer and began to apologize for his behavior back at the village complex. The resident stated that he was not comfortable with the security officer asking him questions about his vehicle and why he was at the village in the first place. As a security officer explained that he has a right to question the resident and attempt to prevent a crime, the resident became belligerent and began to yell profanity at the officer. The security officer returned to his vehicle, departed the location, and the resident did the same. Now, this is a perfect example of our officers doing the right thing, investigating, and then being verbally attacked, if you will, for this incident. And, you know, it is suspicious to be parked there with the lights on and no one around, and we still don't know who he was talking to. So that I put that in there because that's kind of, we're kind of seeing a pattern now,
right,
of this behavior of our officers. Unfortunately, it didn't capture, it happened so fast, it didn't capture on body-worn camera.
Okay.
Or I would have had that.
So I guess a question I would ask, Kelly, is there a benefit to a follow-up letter from the district to a resident in something like this, just stating our concerns? And then if
the,
they
the
want
only
to
thing
meet,
I think of that, but without it, it's just like this community and any community, without it being captured on body-worn camera, it just weakens the point of he said, she said. But yeah, that's an option we can look at because we are seeing it happen more. You have something on that?
I would also like to add that staff have been seeing an increase in those types of interactions with the community as well, and we're probably going to have a little bit longer of a conversation with that when we get to the next item, but it's not just security patrol staff that are encountering that. It's also district office staff and utility staff as well that are experiencing the same type of interaction with the residents.
So, okay.
Okay. And the next category here on 3/14/2023 at 12:30 hours, a security sergeant responded to request of a follow-up investigation of a death report at the village. Sergeant Outram.
I've changed the dates, Kelly.
Okay, I'm sorry.
See, read up here, because remember I called you.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
Because I was confused about that.
3/21/23 at 12:30 hours, our security sergeant responded to request to conduct a follow-up investigation of a death report at the village complex. Sergeant Outram discovered that on 3/17/23, a resident had reported a deceased body was inside a vehicle and that was parked in the guest parking lot. The village manager responded to the scene and verified deceased individual and a firearm were inside the vehicle. The Sheriff's Department and Metropolitan Fire Department responded and eventually turned the case over to the County Coroner's Office for a death investigation. And with that, if there's no questions, I can...
And then we have our...
Hold on a second. Yeah.
I was just curious, Kelly. I saw this incident report, but I didn't see anything in the law.
Yes, you missed it. I was just explaining to Director Mabee. There was no patrol working that 2 hours when this case happened on that Friday. So even though we didn't respond to it, that's a 911 call to the Sheriff's Department that needs to be made. But as a courtesy, because the manager asked us to come out there and do like a follow-up report, we did that for community involvement. That's one reason why we went back out there.
I guess since it was a request for service, I would think that it would go on the log.
Right. Now, it was on the following Monday. It was on the log.
Oh,
yeah, we didn't retro it back to the actual
no,
incident
we did not.
Date. I think that's what you're asking, Gail.
So it was on the log on the 21st.
Right. Of his follow-up. Yeah.
Okay.
And it could be one of those that I think, Kelly, kind of moving forward, it might be if so let's take the example you used on the squatting incident. That follow-up is 8 months later.
Correct.
But in that contact follow-up, maybe we have to highlight that this was the incident date. Does that make sense?
Correct.
I don't know if that would help you, Gail.
If that went to patrol through our dispatch area, in this case, he just directly came in and saw me.
Right, and so then, that's kind of that difficulty. But I think if it goes into the log, if it were and it was a follow up, it's a follow up from date XYZ at this time. I think that's kind of what you're looking for, Gail.
Yeah, it just seems to me whenever there's a request for service, it should go on the log, even though you don't end up going out there. Like another time, there was a request for service. Service, you know, for an accident, and you couldn't go,
but
just
don't
put it on the log.
Oh, right. So in this case, if I understand correctly, it went directly to the Sheriff's Department.
Correct.
So we wouldn't have got it. Now, if we had patrol would have responded because they heard the sheriff and Station 59 go, so it would have got entered. So by not having patrol, we didn't hear it, we didn't go, we weren't requested type of thing.
But didn't Amy, the manager, call you?
I should call Mel, and he was already off. So, and Mel called me the next day and said, hey, what can we do? This kind of call needs to go directly to the sheriff, not us.
Yeah. Right.
Because we are not.
As long as it ends up on the log, it was a request for service. Maybe a convoluted way if it was a request for service and it's significant happening in the community, then it should be on the log.
Well,
and I just want to.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're asking, but there are, and I'll pick on, I won't pick, that's a bad term. An example I'll use is domestic violence. That goes directly to the 911 operator. Metro Fire may or may not go for staging. That's not necessarily a request for service for us. It's happened in our area. If we don't have a patrol officer, there was no request. A lot of times, if we have a patrol officer, they'll respond, then it gets put into the law. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and so, that makes sense. If an officer is a security officer, is right. Dispatched, then it should go in the law. It would completely bypass the steps.
Right, and
but as long as there's a request for service of security, I just think it's
sometimes, though, there's requests for services, and we just can't go. We're not going to go to some of these calls that are. What do we have? Assault with a deadly weapon. There's certain calls where a sex crime investigation. The dispatcher will say that needs to go directly to the sheriff. So it was a request for service, but that's not in our preview to go to that.
So you have cases like that, assault with a deadly weapon.
Or like someone calls and said, hey, there's a child abuse investigation. Can you guys come out? We are security. That needs to go directly to the sheriffs. We're not going to put that in the log. And there's several calls like that that occur. They just don't. We roll it over. We should have been called the first place. We
right.
Roll it over to the sheriffs or the CHP.
Well, I think there might be a case to be made that it be an interest to the community. Say, you got a call from
the dispatcher.
Or
child abuse or whatever.
And you realized it wasn't. But say you received a call of assault with a deadly weapon, immediately referred to the sheriff's office. But they just things, keeping those things kind of secret kind of bothers me.
Well, I don't know if they're secret. It's just that they've called the wrong number, and we're telling them this is where you need to go.
But if you know.
Oh, if we know?
Yeah.
So I understand. I understand what you're asking. What I'll do, Gail, is let me work with Kelly on this, because I don't think it's a high number. I understand it's easier from an educational standpoint for the community if we're that point of contact, whether we go or not. We have numbers, right? Obviously, Sacramento County Sheriffs can give us the exact number of services to this area for calls for service, but that is, I'm not going to say arduous, but that's an arduous process. Versus how our log system works. So let me have some process conversations with Kelly, because I think we could even if we do notifications, and some of them are extremely sensitive, as you know, that information can be didacted out, but at least we were notified and transferred. Right, and on this date and time, and at least that I think meets the intent what you're looking at for what it is. Now, as a 911 provider for 30 some odd years, what I was dispatched to and what I rolled up on were two different things, because that chief complaint didn't match what I was dispatched to. So a lot of times, just what we're getting as a notification isn't truly what it's going to be. And we will never know, because it got turned over to the sheriff's department. But I understand the notification aspect. Definitely not trying to hide anything. I think we have to work on a procedural process. So let me, give me 1 second.
Other cases where Kelly's handled a call himself, and so he hasn't put it on the log. So I think it's important when Kelly handles the case.
Right.
Like a little old lady whose vehicle went missing, of course, you know, security couldn't do anything about it and had to help her, you know, report it to CHP. But Kelly didn't. He visited with her, counseled with her, and helped her.
Right.
It was a call for service.
Right.
And it didn't end up on the log.
Yeah. No. And that's a good point. And a lot of times.
And I can answer to that if you want. Yeah. I'm hybriding right now because we're short staff. And if I'm if we're in a meeting like this, and I know we don't have a coverage for 2 hours, and I'm in meetings or in the admin stuff, and I hear something, I might go out there and do that. But I'm not logged in. I'm not good at dispatch. If someone just came in, I'll help out that way. But I try to.
But you're an important part of the security department. Surely we should have some recognition.
But it does happen often. A couple times it has happened.
Just a few times.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, let me work on some procedural stuff, because, again, at the end of the day, we don't need to pad our numbers. We don't need to do those things. We just need an accurate, if something comes our direction, what is it, right? And what did we do with it? How did we deal with it? Those type of things. No, I understand what you're saying. Mr. Gear, you came up to the podium when we were discussing. I don't know if you have a question.
Thank you. Kelly, were you finished? I had questions about the security log, specifically incident. On March 1st, there was somebody from the... a welfare check. It's the fourth one down.
Very good.
Yeah. Somebody from the village was walking home, apparently from Galt, and one of the officers stopped and did a welfare check. And the person provided his name and address, and this says, which was verified by dispatch on the ABDI system.
Uh-huh, okay.
And I'm wondering, what kind of information do you have on residents of the village in that ABDI system?
The village, I don't see that.
The last line.
Oh,
says,
taking from the Galt to the village.
Mm-hmm. The male individual provided me with a name and address, which was verified by dispatch on ABDI system.
Yeah, I'd have to. I don't have his report with me here, but I'd have to report and see what exactly. I can't release his name. Is that what?
I'm just wondering, what information do you have on residents of the village in the ABDI system?
Oh well, I can give you generic information if they have a barcode. And they pay the fee, and they put it on their golf cart.
Oh no, the village. I'm talking about people in the village.
Yeah, I'm telling you, if you have people that live in the village that have barcodes on their golf carts, and they pay the fee to go back and forth, so we'll have all.
Not very many. No, well, it's $300.
I'm just letting you know that's one type of information we have.
But you don't have.
No,
everybody
we
in the
have
village.
Nothing now on the billing side, which is completely different than the barcode side. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we have all the. Information we need, but the two systems don't talk. You're specifically asking about the security side.
Yes.
Unless we have information the residents given us, i.e. we're going to be off on vacation, come by, do welfare checks, then that's put in the system. Otherwise, we do not have any information on folks that didn't give us any information to start with.
Okay. An example of that, the person I just described that parked his vehicle outside where you live with the flashers on, ADBI says, oh, he lives in the village, he lives in the south. But he was visiting mom, or we don't know who, in there. So that's another example of how we can do it. Maybe this person lived here, and was just walking there. So.
Well, it said he lived in the village. He was a resident of the village. And it seemed unusual that you were able to find him in your
ABDI. He could be one of those people that had the golf cart and went back and forth.
But he volunteered that information.
Okay.
Yeah, he gave us that information.
Okay. So you don't have that information, like on me, in your ABDI system.
I have no idea. We haven't looked you up, so.
I used to have a barcode. It was...
So old information is in there. It would just say deactivated your barcode. Or a lot of people used to live there, and they moved to the village, and so their information is still in there.
Okay.
It just says deactivated.
Can I find out what information have for me or for the residents?
It's information that you
I'm just
here.
Generally asking.
I can't do it here. I have to go to the computer, but I can give you my business card, and you can call me or come by the office.
So if somebody wanted to know, they could call you and ask.
Yeah, give me your barcode or barcode number or your name. I can put you in there and see. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, item number four.
Thank you, sir.
Paula.
So I believe a couple months ago we brought to the security committee the front desk safety concerns, and we reached out to Gordian, I believe. They provided the quote for the safety center, all of the safety center repairs, and we had them come out.
How's that going for us?
Fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah. And they did provide us with a few quotes with three different configurations to provide some safety equipment and updates to the front counter for staff. And ultimately, the bid was well over $100,000. So we will probably put this out to the board, probably through the budget development process, and create a CIP for the administration office and do it through that process, and then allow the board to make that determination if this is the direction we want to go. We had not anticipated the cost being so significant for these upgrades. At minimum, we were planning on putting up safety glass, and that was well over $35,000. So we're going to use this as part of the CIP process through the budget development for 23-24 fiscal year, and kind of scrap any work at the admin office for the time being.
So I understand all that. I guess my question would then be, in the short term, I don't know if the cameras that, and I just go back to the Prop 218 protest, when and again the resident has great one-liners. His accusation was we had a wood chipper that we used because the count was off by 400, and of course they came in multiple days late. So I guess my question would be, using that as the example, would a temporary better camera audio system work?
We actually have done that. We had Olaf out, about 3 weeks ago?
Yes, I just paid him. So, yes. It was about 3 weeks ago.
It's been about 3 weeks. We had the camera up front did not provide decent audio.
Right.
It was positioned in a way that it did not capture a lot of the activity.
Yeah, and it was more for security, somebody breaking in than interaction. So
we've moved the position of the camera. We have better audio with that camera, so we're able to capture those interactions a lot better. Another thing that I want to remind all of the residents is that we record every single phone call here.
Right.
So we've had a lot of increased abusive conduct by some residents calling in to discuss concerns, whether it's utility billing, security, water issues that they're encountering. There's been a lot of profanity used, a lot of abusive language towards staff, and we are now working towards a protocol for staff that includes de-escalation treatment, an internal policy that will help staff identify when to hang up, when to transfer, how to respond, those types of things. Because it has become, there's been a significant increase over the last few months with this type of behavior. And while it's unfortunate, it's not acceptable. And I don't expect any of my team to continue listening to that type of abuse.
No, I agree. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And so kind of that's where we're at today. You know, obviously we'll go the secondary route with the CIP process through budget. But in the interim, we do record the phone calls, and we are recording the interactions at the front counter. So I just ask that, you know, if residents are frustrated, we completely understand. You know, we're certainly not doing incorrect billing intentionally. We're not having intentional water issues and shutting water off to make repairs and to intentionally inconvenience people. These are things that occur throughout the course of our business. And, you know, we are trying to remedy a lot of the utility issues that we're having through the new system implementation, which will be coming up in the next couple of weeks. So there are going to be bugs. There will be bugs in the future. You know, it's just one of the nature of the beast. When you do any kind of system implementation, you review your current to ensure that it's correct moving forward. And some of these corrections have been a little painful for some residents. But again, these are corrections that we need to make. And we just ask that please be respectful and professional. You know, there are rules of engagement for our team, and we expect the same courtesy from the residents as well.
So thank you. I think a couple of things. Prior to the meeting, Kelly and I were having a conversation about just the quality improvement process and just how part of his responsibility is spot checking the body worn cameras.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the recording line, because that's where I come from in a prior life, does two things. It protects the employee, and then it protects whoever's the caller, right, from accusations. I would say as we build through that policy, de-escalation training, all those other things, mm-hmm. I really have no problem. I won't speak for the board, but I'll speak as the board president. If those concerns rise to a level that conversations need to be had separate with the resident and provide that audio to the resident, and again, I think it's a reflection of this community right now. Community members berate the board. I'm more than fine with that. I'm an elected official, so I can take it. We have people make offhand comments. I do not tolerate people, and we had it the last meeting where a resident was aggressive verbally towards a consultant. That's totally inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Come after me. I'm the one that hired the consultant. So how I wear my frustration might be at the same level, but so the unfortunate part is they're going to mimic what people do to the board. And so that just tells you the mentality of what's going on out there on the social media. And there's no repercussions, but I think moving forward, we put some systems in place, especially with education, and then when that rises to that occasion, I think very similar to how Kelly does his quality improvement, and if we have to address it with the resident, let's address it with the resident and say, here's the audio. Seems inappropriate to us. This might be language you normally speak to your children and your residents, your fellow neighbors. It's inappropriate to us.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I know in the past we've had to have restraining orders, et cetera, because folks somehow just can't function in society. And I get it, and it's going to happen again. But at the end of the day, I think we're on the right path for the CPI and then also the camera, but then more importantly, as we move forward, the training, de-escalation, then when it does rise, and I'll have conversation with the board, because I would assume any of the board members wouldn't tolerate a lot of that. So, okay, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Kelly, item 5.
Hi, we talked about the subject a little bit before we came on out here today, but one of the things I wanted to propose to you and to the board is that in security, we have one supervisor position other than me, and it's called a security sergeant, and right now we have Sergeant Mel Outram in the acting position.
Okay.
This position has been hard frozen, is that a good way, or for over a year now. And I'm looking to retain our quality staff, and I think Sergeant Outram has proved himself here, and we want to keep him. And I am proposing that we lift that ban or freeze on that position so we can make him acting, or take him from acting and make him full-time, and take his pay from what he's making now and from what the top step is and maybe somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
That's what I'm proposing to do, because like I said, it's been over a year now, and I think we have the best candidate now. He's been working with us for almost a year now. I think it's like maybe 9 months.
Okay.
And I think this is his qualifications, and is actually, it's better than qualifications. We've had a dry run with him, if you so to speak. And he gets along very well with the RMA board, and his enforcement is appreciated, and he's done well here. And I think, you know, we got to do, I realize there's a lot of financial issues with security. However, we got to keep quality people, and I think that's one way of retaining him. The second issue along that line, right, it's all, okay, yeah.
Yep, continue on.
Is Paula has informed me that last year we spent about $60,000 on ABA that wasn't in our budget. I've been able to reduce all that. We only have one ABA left, and he's going to be replaced next week with the final training of our two part-time security officers. I'm envisioning that savings could help with the sergeant position. And also, I know we can't hire full-time, maybe that might be too much, but I would also act with the savings of the $60,000, part of it go to making Mel a full-time sergeant, and maybe hiring a part-time security officer that doesn't get the benefits to help us kind of fill in the void. But yet, we're still understaffed, but it just helps a little bit, because I think the biggest problem that I see here is hiring, retaining staff here. And when you have people that want to work here that are from the community, that's the winner-winner chicken dinner, if you will. Use Amelia's line there. Right? Is that I have a person here that lives in the South, has been here 21 years, understands and reads, and he goes, hey, I want to help you, and I want to work. When you have those kind of candidates, it's kind of hard to say, well, we're just in a freeze right now. We don't know when we get to you. If this is a way, I thought we can maybe bring them in part-time, at least have them here, and when things do get a little bit better, well, we already have the great people in waiting to take these spots. So that's my take on that category.
Okay. What I would ask, Kelly, mm-hmm. What is today? Let me look at the calendar.
It's Thursday, the 6th of April.
Okay. I would ask for that recommendation. As you stated, and I think some of it's going to fall within Paula's purview on some of the numbers. I don't know if we can get it to the 19th, but maybe for the May meeting,
okay.
We get it on the agenda. And really what you spoke about in that process, where we're going to see some cost savings, right? In my lightning math, we are covering roughly 75% of all patrol services right now. So we're probably not going to get to 100%, but what we do have is vacation, sick leave.
Coming up, yes.
All these
summer
other
months.
Things, right? Mm-hmm. So I think some of that cost savings from the contract, and I'll pick on the sergeant position, I'm only paying the difference in hourly to what it is, right? And we can figure out what that step increase, et cetera. So that's a minimum hourly increase. The part-timers, it's that backfill position. I'm paying it anyways. I need somebody to slide in there when I'm on sick leave, vacation, et cetera, et cetera. Costs are still the same. So I would ask, and I know we don't know when the date of the May meeting is, but I would ask that probably a memo from probably come from you, Kelly, but probably supporting it, Paula, to that would be the process, because we're not hiring new full-time. We're just getting part-time that can backfill for us.
Right, and it's so hard to find the quality full-time people, but I think I was kidding with Paula the other day. I go, there's not a lot of bright stars in security. I go, but the one that is there is our retention rate. We've lost very little, and the people that want to be here want to be here, but the problem is the wants potential employees aren't going to come exactly when our finances are better.
They're
coming at these different hours.
Right.
And when we have them, we can at least let them get their foot in the door. At least we have them when things get better, because that's half the problem here is the timing.
Correct.
That's what I'm saying.
Correct. And so I think we can move forward. Well, it does a couple of things. One, we can get the training, get the onboarding. We have them at the part-time.
Right.
We know that there's part-time positions available. If nothing else, we've helped them on the resume portion that they are working, et cetera, et cetera. So if they are going to move on, they've got a good track record. But, yeah, I would say in lieu of everything going on with staff, I would say let's – now, I'm not pushing it off. It's just if it can happen on the April, great. But I would say let's not kill ourselves.
May.
Let's go May.
Okay.
And then –
Okay. I'll put it on the May agenda then.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's my instructions.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Very good.
And then I would just – because it is clear direction, I obviously have to educate the board on those cost savings to expenditures. What does that look like across the board? But again, a lot of that's going to come from the recommendation and supporting document. Okay.
Thank you.
Is that all you have on five?
That's all I have five,
okay.
On five.
Thank
Six.
You. Staff's comments or suggestions? Concerns? Kelly, I've said it before. Thank you. We're getting to a point in when I first ran for the board, my slogan was put community service back into our title, right? And so now we're at that safe, competent, consistent level. And we just don't have enough patrol services. So we're always asking you to do everything with less. But what you are able to do, you're very consistent, and that speaks volumes. I think moving forward, everything from the de-escalation training to the professionalism, we've crested that wave where the viral stuff that we're complaining about patrol services, it's just not there. A lot of it has to do with video that we have to demonstrate to the residents they were right or that security was correct in their behavior. So with that, I would just, again, and I'll touch on again, Paula, even before we get a policy or procedure in place, we have inappropriate I would say bring it forward as soon as possible. I really have no problem addressing those issues as the board president to residents on, and again, my perception could be completely wrong of what appropriate vocabulary and all those other things, but I have no problem having those conversations with the residents because, again, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter who pays our salary. We have to be safe, competent, consistent, courteous, and professional, right? And if we do our part, I get people are going to come unhinged, and if it's a one-off, so be it. But if there's a pattern, then we'll deal with the pattern. So not seeing or hearing anything else, I'm going to close the meeting at 10:53. Amelia?
Thank you very much.